ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। मुखं करोति वाचनं पाङ्गुं लाङ्गायते गिरिं यत्कृपातमहं वन्दे श्रीगुरुं विनतारणम्। श्रीमद्भागवतम् कैंटो नंबर 6 चैप्टर 9 एंटाइटल्ड द अपीयरेंस ऑफ द डीमन वृत्रसुरा। टेक्स्ट नंबर 1। श्रीशुक उवाच तस्यासन् विश्वरूपस्य शिरंसि त्रीणि भारत सोम पीथं सुरा पीथं अनादम् इति शुश्रुमा। श्रीशुक उवाच तस्य सन् विश्वरूपस्य शिरंसि त्रीणि भारत सोमापीथं सुरापीथं अनादम् इति शुश्रुमा। श्रीशुक उवाच तस्यासन् विश्वरूपस्य शिरंसि त्रीणि भारत सोमापीथं सुरापीथं अनादम् इति शुश्रुमा। श्रीशुक उवाच तस्य सन् विश्वरूपस्य शिरंसि त्रीणि भारत सोमापीथं सुरापीथं अनादम् इति शुश्रुमा।
Shishu Kumbhacha, Shishu Kumbhacha.
Ladies. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Sri Shukadeva Goswami said, Tasya of him, Asan, there were, Vishwarupasya of Vishwarupa, the priest of the demigods, Shiramsi, heads, Trini, three, Bharata, O Maharaj Parikshit, Samapitam, used for drinking the beverage Soma, Surapitam, used for drinking wine, Ana Adam, used for eating. Iti, thus. Shushruma, I have heard by the Parampara system. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, Vishwarup, who was engaged as the priest of the demigods, had three heads. He used one to drink the beverage somarasa, another to drink wine, and the third to eat food. O King Parikshit, thus I have heard from authorities. Kindly repeat after me. Sri Shukadeva Goswami continued, Vishwarupa, who is engaged as the priest of the demigods, had three heads. He used one to drink the beverage somarasa, another to drink wine, and a third to eat food. O King Parikshit, thus I have heard from authorities. Purport. One cannot directly perceive the kingdom of heaven, its king and other inhabitants, or how they perform their various engagements, for no one can go to the heavenly planets. Although modern scientists have invented many powerful space vehicles, they cannot even go to the moon, not to speak of other planets. By direct experience, one cannot learn anything beyond the range of human perception. One must hear from authorities. Therefore, Shukadeva Goswami, a great personality, says, what I am describing to you, O King, is what I have heard from authoritative sources. This is the Vedic system. The Vedic knowledge is called Sruti because it must be received by being heard from authorities. It is beyond the realm of our false experimental knowledge. End of purport. So this is the beginning of a new chapter in connection with the performance of some special yajna, whereby the great personality of Vritrasura will be making his experience. So, of course, in the very beginning, this verse that we are hearing this morning, some very unusual information is being given to us. Here is a priest of the demigods, performing of yajna. The first notable thing, of course, is that he has three heads. And then the explanation being given is that when you have three heads, you can eat three times. And he is drinking somarasa from one of his heads, one of his mouths, drinking wine from another, and eating food from another. So immediately, obviously, what to speak of devotees, those who are non-devotees will have many, many questions. and devotees, of course, as well. So, Srila Prabhupada, of course, in the purport, is explaining something very essential and very fundamental to our understanding and accepting this kind of information. Otherwise, normally, it is very difficult, we could say not reasonable, to accept something that we don't have very much experience of. Means people, you know, somebody with two heads and someone who is supposed to be a priest and drinking wine and soma rasa and all these things. So, therefore, Srila Prabhupada explains how these are activities which are going on in Swargaloka, in the heavenly planets. These are activities of demigods, and no one can go there. Heavenly planets, actually the moon, Prabhupada speaks about the moon. The moon is a heavenly planet, and that's one of the reasons why no one can go there. You cannot just, one has to become qualified, so many adjustments one has to make, actually, to go to such planets. So in the Bhagavatam, actually, we find various information, which is especially, I just remember how when I was in Montreal and Srila Prabhupada was visiting, that was in 1975, we were all, you know, scrambling to be, Prabhupada was staying in one small apartment, the temple president's apartment, close to the Montreal temple. And he was in one small room in the back, and the devotees, brahmacharis, were in the front. Couldn't see, actually, we couldn't see Srila Prabhupada. But we were extending our ears, Shruti, right? Shruti is being mentioned here in the purport, to try and hear the conversation. And they were discussing at that time, Srila Prabhupada was translating the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And of course, we couldn't hear very much. I remember hearing one thing which I thought was pretty amazing, which I can share with you. I don't know if it's recorded or not. I've never read it. The devotees were asking, you know, because the fifth canto is not an easy canto to deal with. It's just like different sections of the Bhagavatam, like this particular verse. It's not, you know, it's not something that we can just, yeah, okay, it's all right, you know. So one devotee was asking Srila Prabhupada some additional explanation. He had explained something from the fifth canto. And then he was asking something, I forget what it was. But then Srila Prabhupada, he replied that what I spoke just a few minutes ago is from realization. You know, most things that Prabhupada would speak about is from reference to previous acharyas. Prabhupada's whole translation, as we know, rendering of the Bhagavatam, is that he would read the commentaries from the previous acharyas, and then he would add in his purports. So that's when we read Prabhupada's purports, they are full of transcendental realizations and transcendental information coming from all of these different acharyas. So the interesting thing was, to me, as a new devotee, 1 year, maybe less than 1 year in the movement, could understand that, for someone to say that, he has to be situated on a very elevated platform. So the general process by which we can understand, and of course the point I wanted to make also in this connection regarding the fifth canto, is that when Prabhupada actually received the printing of the fifth canto, and actually in the fifth canto, in addition to the whole explanation of the cosmology and how this universe is made up, also has descriptions about the hellish planets as well. So Srila Prabhupada, he made the very very strong comment that many of my disciples, when they will read certain sections of this fifth canto, they will leave the movement. Because there are descriptions in the fifth canto that are totally, mind-boggling. So the Bhagavatam and our Vedic literatures are filled with various information which we cannot immediately understand, or even after many, many years. However, we are being told that this is sruti, the process for actually accepting knowledge which is actually beyond our ability to understand in this conditioned state. Why we cannot understand? Because we are, especially all of us here in the material world, we are conditioned by the modes of material nature. We are covered. Our intelligence is covered. Our senses are covered, and as Prabhupada explains, we have four defects. Every human being has four defects, which prevents us from actually understanding even material things, what to speak of subject matters of a transcendental nature. And therefore, sruti. Sruti means, our Vedic literatures are divided into two, sruti and smriti. What is also called paravidya and aparavidya. Vidya, knowledge. We understand about God. We can understand about God, about dharma, about anything, especially by the process of these two levels of knowledge. Sruti, which is the direct knowledge actually given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that knowledge covers especially subject matters of a divine, purely divine, spiritual, transcendental nature. And actually, because it is coming from Krishna, who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Adipurusha, Govindam Adipurusham, who is perfect in all respects, therefore that knowledge is also perfect. And that is the system for receiving such knowledge. So that is vidya, but paravidya, the highest level of knowledge. And then the other section of the Vedas, also very important, is aparavidya. It is vidya, knowledge, given to us, especially, we could say revealed to us, by personalities who are situated on the liberated platform, you see. And this is meant to be our source of knowledge. That's, Srila Prabhupada explains, that is the main reason why today, if we look in the context of education, modern education's source of knowledge is totally out of the context of Shruti or Smriti. It is not in the category of Paravidya, and it is also not in the category of Aparavidya. So therefore, there's only one more category left, and that is called Avidya. Avidya means nescience or ignorance. So in this way, we can easily understand as devotees, all the knowledge that we are receiving in modern day society, in our schools and colleges and universities, it is all avidya. It is all ignorance. And that is why Srila Prabhupada spoke very heavily against this bogus system of education, modern education. It is not based on knowledge, and therefore so much of, actually it's based on speculation. So Shruti, in the Vedic culture, one is taught from a very young age to receive knowledge. Those who go to Gurukula, that's why Gurukula is so important. The Gurukula system is based on Shruti, and this hearing process. Hearing, as we know, Sravanam Kirtanam Vishnu Smaranam. Sravanam, hearing, is the hearing faculty. Hearing faculty is the most important of all of our senses. That is why when we are about to leave this body, although very often people will be in coma condition, isn't it? And seemingly, I see some people, not even before leaving their body, some people, for example, will fall into coma, will get some disease or have some accident, and be many, many years. I mean, 30 years or more, the whole life. There was, and we think that they are, you know, unconscious. Being in coma doesn't mean unconscious. There was some report maybe a few years back of one person who was in coma for 30 years. And then one doctor had some kind of, you know, they're always experimenting in different ways, so one kind of system he tried to actually see if that person could hear or not. And lo and behold, he was sent some signal that, my God, finally somebody's contacting me. That person was for 30 years without anyone really knowing and understanding that he could hear. One of our devotees in Montreal, that was some maybe 10 years back, he was not initiated, but he was, since the beginning, you know, he had met Srila Prabhupada when Prabhupada had come, but somehow or other he had, you know, remained in, you know, with bad association and whatnot, and he was, you know, involved in so many bad activities. Anyways, he became very ill, and he was taken to the hospital, and they called us, you know, this person has been, he's your devotee, some of you should come and speak to him. Of course, when we went to the hospital, he was already in coma, and so we didn't know how to relate. But then the nurse that was there was explaining how this is a common phenomena that takes place. Most people who may be in coma, who are in coma, and about to leave their body, they can hear every single thing. You know, so the hearing, that's why hearing we give so much of importance. In ordinary life, it is important, and especially in spiritual life. Our process is by hearing, especially hearing from authorities. So this is why, like in this verse, although we are hearing things which are at first not at all easy to, I mean, they are beyond our experience. But it is a very important principle. It is not that we accept things blindly. We accept knowledge. We accept knowledge because it is a coming down, what we call in the descending process, two processes of acquiring knowledge, the descending process and the ascending process. So most people nowadays, modern education, modern research, modern scientists, their whole process is the opposite of the Vedic process. Actually, they don't believe, isn't it? They don't believe in anything that is perfect. They don't believe in perfection. They don't believe in the absolute truth. And therefore, they will never know what is actually knowledge. They are constantly experimenting. And that was Prabhupada explained in the context of Gandhi. Gandhi, unfortunately, took to that process of experimental knowledge. He wrote a book, I believe, My Experiment with the Absolute Truth, or My Experiment with the Truth, something like that. And therefore, he never accepted guru. One who does not accept, guru means one who does not accept knowledge coming from bona fide authorities. And therefore, one can never really make progress in spiritual life. So sravanam, therefore, is so important. And sruti. But both, Srila Prabhupada explains that actually both sruti and smriti, they are meant to be combined together. This is quite interesting, actually, because Narada Muni, just like here, Prabhupada points out that this knowledge is being given. How does Prabhupada say it? O King Parikshit, thus I have heard from authorities. When Narada Muni, in the seventh canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, after being asked by Yudhisthira Maharaj, that my dear Narada Muni, kindly explain to me the science of Varnashrama Dharma. Now we're getting into Smriti section of the Vedas. Kindly explain to me. And then Narada Muni, probably the very first thing he explains, because Narada Muni is brahmachari, you know, in the context of Varnashrama, there are so many things related to householder life. What's a brahmachari going to teach me about householder life? That question very often comes. Who are you? You know, you're a sannyasi. You're a brahmachari. What's your experience about family life? What's your experience about sex life? So Narada Muni, actually, the very first thing he explains to Yudhisthira Maharaj is that he, of course, thanks him very much. Thank you for requesting me to speak to you on the science of Varnashrama Dharma. And I have heard, I will simply repeat to you what I have heard from Narada Narayan Rishi. Narada Muni had heard, had associated and heard from Lord Narayan, who is, of course, an expert in all subject matters, and especially Lord Narayan, who resides in Vaikuntha and is surrounded and served by hundreds and thousands of goddesses of fortune, is very expert in terms of, you know, the subject matter relating with a householder life. So in this way, Narada Muni was giving us the same message here, reassuring us that actually that is why, as Lord Chaitanya, we all remember this conversation between Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Rai. And normally one hears from sannyasis, but here was Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu hearing from a householder and requesting and begging Ramananda Rai kindly speak about transcendental subject matter, kindly speak about very elevated levels of bhakti and devotional service. And although Ramananda Rai, in his very humble mind, was hesitant to speak, Lord Chaitanya spoke that very nice, well-known verse, Kiba Viprak, Kiba Nyasi, Shudra Kene Noi, Jai Krishna Tattvaveta Se Guru Hoi. So, tattva means knowledge, transcendental knowledge, can be received by anyone who follows the system which is given, that means by hearing, and therefore regardless of which ashram one may find oneself in, or regardless of which varna one may follow. If one is fortunate to have received this knowledge from the proper source. So that is our process as devotees. We are not reading ordinary books. When I first visited our Hare Krishna temple or attended my first Sunday feast, that is when I knew about the Bhagavad Gita, but that is when I became introduced to the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the Srimad Bhagavatam is, especially for all of us as devotees, that source of knowledge which is opening, you know, our eyes as to what is, you know, reality, both on the level of, let's say, material reality and spiritual reality, means material knowledge and transcendental knowledge. So the Vedas have these two levels of knowledge, as we mentioned earlier, and that is one of the important statements given also by Narada Muni to Yudhisthira Maharaj, where he speaks about the principles of dharma. Dharma is actually meant to be the life and soul of devotees, and dharma means both Shruti and Smriti. So Narada Muni, he explains, dharma mulam hi Bhagavan. Dharma mulam hi Bhagavan. Sarva Veda mayo harihi. Smritam cha tabidam rajan. Yena chatma prasidati. A very similar explanation given or found in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, where it is explained that the highest form of dharma is the performance of bhakti devotional service, which alone, when performed, ahaitukiya pritihata, without material motivation and without interruption, can fulfill, satisfy, meet all of our material and spiritual needs or necessities. So the same thing Narada Muni is explaining. And in that verse actually is making reference to the Vedas in terms of both Shruti and Smriti. And I don't want to get along. this will require a little more explanation. But in those purports, in that section of the Bhagavatam, when Narada Muni actually explains, in this particular verse also, that I just quoted a few minutes ago, beginning with Dharma Mulam Hi Bhagavan, means the essence of Vedas is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the root of all knowledge. And those who are saintly persons, their constant meditation is how to put into practice, how to realize this knowledge of the Vedas. And this is very interesting because Prabhupada explains that for us as devotees especially, to realize or to put into practice, we need to demonstrate in a practical way how we live, what is our actual factual understanding of Vedic knowledge. In other words, it's one thing to know about the Vedas, it's another to actually live according to the principles of the Vedas. It's one thing to know about Dharma. It's one thing, for example, to know about, because Dharma is meant to be understood and lived on two levels, something that we generally are less acquainted with or familiar with. The Shruti section of the Vedas deals especially with what we call Bhagavat Dharma. And this Bhagavat Dharma is what Srila Prabhupada and Srila Rupa Goswami refers to and summarizes and explains in the very important book called Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the Science of Devotional Service, which is the essence, and the essence of Bhagavad Dharma is bhakti, Krishna bhakti, nitya siddha. It is the eternal perfection, natural constitutional position of the living entity. That's one level of dharma. And most of us actually as bhaktas or devotees are fixed, which is good. You know, we're attracted to this level of dharma. But there's another level of dharma which is in many ways equally important, because without knowing that other level of dharma, we generally not so easily can come to this other level, you see. So, in other words, the more we know and realize about this level of dharma, of Bhagavad Dharma, we will be able to appreciate and also demonstrate in this other level of dharma, this higher reality. So Narada Muni actually explains these two levels very nicely in that particular verse I was quoting. He speaks about Bhagavad Dharma, and then he speaks about Varnashrama Dharma. You see, inasmuch as Bhagavad Dharma, or the science of bhakti, is a perfect and complete science, the knowledge and the whole explanation of Varnashrama Dharma is equally a perfect and complete science. Why is that? Although it's on the material level, it is a perfect and complete science because it is given by Krishna. And it is also, this we can begin to understand very easily, it is a science and knowledge, Varnashrama Dharma, that has many of the same features as Bhagavad Dharma. Means we cannot be happy. We know as devotees, we cannot be happy. That's why we continue to practice the chanting of the holy name. We continue to practice devotional service because it has to do with the spirit soul, isn't it? And spirit soul cannot be happy unless the spirit soul is acting on the platform of the spirit soul. So in a very similar way, this science of Varnashrama Dharma is meant to be the natural lifestyle for those of us who are here in the material world, you see. And when we deviate from that, as we have in present-day society, then we cannot be happy. We cannot be happy materially, and also we cannot be happy spiritually. So that verse is nice explaining, Smritam chatabidam rajan yena chatma prasidati. Atma, Prabhupada explains, as he does in many places, Atma refers to the body, Atma refers to the mind, Atma refers also to the social arrangement in society. And Atma refers to the spirit soul. These four things, when properly explains about Atma in that verse, he translates, Atma means the body, the mind, the soul, and everything else. So everything actually will become properly situated. Everything will become harmonized when we deepen our understanding of dharma in these two levels. And when we see the intimate relation and connection between them. Prabhupada would explain, unless one is a Haridas Thakur, you know, unless we are situated on this topmost liberated platform of Mahabhagavata, then we are less concerned with these seemingly lower material matters. But since majority of us are not on that level, therefore we need to recognize and also put into practice and follow these directives which are given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. So again, this is of course connected with the this is coming from authorities. And somebody was asking me a question just yesterday after the class, because the class was dealing very much with Varnashrama, and it's difficult for me not to make reference to that because it happens to be, I guess, my area of service. So the question was, you know, Maharaj, very often devotees ask, and I will ask you the same question, but we're Vaishnavas, we're practicing, you know, bhakti, devotional service. Why do we need to give so much importance? Why is it even necessary, you know, to adopt or introduce, you know, the whole seemingly very complex system of varna and ashrama? And then I was just giving him briefly, and I'll close on this point, a very important explanation given by one of our foremost acharyas, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Actually, he makes two very important statements. I'll share both of them. The first one, he mentions one of the writings, I forget exactly which one, I won't speculate, we're not supposed to. He explains to the Bhaktivinoda Thakur that for one who is a practicing Vaishnava, the easiest way in which one can make progress as a Vaishnava, the easiest way one can advance in spiritual transcendental life is by remaining and following the system of varna and ashrama. And the second statement, very significant, which he makes, is that all activities that we perform within the system of varnashrama, when offered, when performed with love and devotion, offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and that is the meaning Prabhupada gave us of Daiva Varnashrama, all of those activities become bhakti and there is no karmic reaction, you see. So this is giving us, you know, very good insight, and hearing from such an authority as Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and of course our own Srila Prabhupada in various purports, various conversations, etc., has also explained some of these same principles. So, I probably should have mentioned this at the beginning of the class, because I'm just here, what's the expression, here today, gone tomorrow. I'm here today and gone today, actually. I very much appreciate the fact that Krishna is giving me the opportunity to visit here at New Dwarka Dham. And I know that there are many senior Vaishnavas here in Los Angeles serving since the days of Srila Prabhupada. I had my great fortune of having darshan of Srila Prabhupada in Montreal and, of course, in India a few times. But I deeply appreciate the fact that, well, so many things. One, that the devotees are continuing to serve both those who have been since the very beginning and those who are maybe coming afterwards, or even those who are just newly coming. This is a very special place, Los Angeles Temple. being that place where Srila Prabhupada established his Western world headquarters. Actually, at one time Prabhupada was thinking Montreal might be that place. he was looking around because Prabhupada had to leave, as we know, the U.S. and spent quite a few years in the late 60s in Montreal, and was looking at different buildings, trying to figure out, you know, okay, this will be a nice building, you know, for our world headquarters. He was thinking in those terms. Anyways, this building has come out as this temple, these beautiful deities of Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish and Gornitai, Lord Jagannath Baladev Subhadra. So I would like to thank very much the devotees for continuing to serve very nicely here, and seek the blessings of all of you so that all of us can continue amidst all of the so many, you know, challenges which are there. We're living in not so easy times, but I think we can all understand that. But as Prabhupada would often remind us, this process of Krishna consciousness and this knowledge which we find in the Bhagavatam especially, this is actually the real hope, and in many ways Prabhupada would explain the only hope for present-day misguided society. I was here, as I mentioned yesterday, like some 20 years back, attending a Rath Yatra. I only stayed also a very short time during that visit. I wish the devotees continued, you know, success in their serving the Lord here. And if Krishna is kind, he'll allow me to come back again possibly at some future date. So I'd like to close on this, and if there's any question, please don't ask difficult questions. You know, anyways, yeah, please go ahead. Okay, a comment and a question.
When Srila Prabhupada was in Sweden, he was speaking to some local authorities. Some of them were, one of them was impressed, but at the same time he wanted like a test. Uh-huh. Like, okay, what is the practical example of what you're saying? You know, like we usually speak about philosophy and so much jnana. Any religion can speak about philosophy. Mm. So what is your practical example for a good society, for a good understanding of what you're saying? And then he proposes to one of his disciples, what is that place called in New Vrindavan? So my comment was that, you know, if we devotees have some practical examples like that, people are actually, you say, oh, you're walking the talk.
Yes, yes.
So now the second question is, the question is, okay. In our, for devotees living in the big cities with the philosophy of simple living and higher thinking, what would be your recommendation to actually make impact in the people there? Having a farm is easy, but living in the big cities, yeah. Using cars, using technology, using so many other things.
How to apply the concept of simple living and high thinking without taking a plow? I mean, without plowing, I guess. most of the principles which are there in, let's say, what we call Varnashrama Dharma, concept, regardless of where one is living, because within Varnashrama Dharma, people are not only living in the country, people are not only living in villages, although the majority of people are. The cities are also there. Cities were there during Krishna's time. And cities have their place. So one can apply these principles of simple living and high thinking by especially in the cities, for example, where there's so much of opportunities for, well, there's opportunities for sense gratification everywhere, of course, in the material world. But in the cities, the modes of passion make us want to maybe run after or come in contact more with things which may distract us from our main purpose of advancing and progressing in Krishna consciousness. One, even in the cities, one should, although we, most of our devotees are working in the cities, they need a car. You know, the Prabhupada says we don't need cars. Ultimately, we don't need cars. But when we're living in the city, most people do need because of the kind of lifestyle that we're living. Still, one can try to simplify as much as possible by minimizing one's basic necessities, by really, trying to understand that we can be happy simply by meeting our basic necessities. So, in Western countries, especially, very often people, the tendency is there, just to buy and accumulate more and more. People have, Prabhupada explains in India, people have one set or two sets of cloth. In the Western countries, we have closets full of clothes, half of which we don't wear, very often. one can, there are a number of things, for example, even in the city, to connect with this philosophy of simple living and high thinking. Some very practical things can be done in terms of even like community gardens are popular, and it's one practical way that one can become connected with the land. Although in the city, in most of our cities, it's more difficult. We cannot do as one would do in the country. So those who are living in the cities, as we apply, let's say, the principles, the basic principles of Krishna consciousness, that means being regulated in our lifestyle, being strong in our sadhana, Krishna will, I could give a list of specific things, but Krishna will help us, will help individuals to understand how one can simplify one's lifestyle even while remaining in the city, although certain things we cannot avoid. I would say it's largely a question of consciousness, because even a millionaire who's surrounded by so much opulence, who's living in a big mansion, for example, if his consciousness is that of a devotee, he will live simply, even surrounded by opulence, you see. And it is when we develop this consciousness, devotee consciousness, then by minimizing and not being attached to whatever material surrounding or opulence Krishna may provide, only then we can actually, our consciousness can become elevated. So I would say, to a large extent, and this is of course a basic instruction for all of us, myself included, that we need to work more and more on solidifying our sadhana. The more our sadhana is strong, then Krishna will help us how we can simplify in a real practical way our lives, and in this way we'll be able to, Any other? Yes.
Institute the principles of Varnashram Dharma, because in a rural situation you have grihasthas acting as vaishyas, producing food, and in a community setting, you know, it's very easy for them to, you know, kind of bond together and produce, you know, food together. They're all living in this community, all interdependent. In the city, because, you know, the cities are very different than, say, Krishna's time. Cities are based on industry, and they're based on, in our culture, you know, the whole organization is based on cheap energy that's running out. Yeah. And, you know, the grihasthas, which the principle of the grihastha in terms of supporting the movement is that they give 50% of their income. Mm. And nowadays, how many devotees give 20% or, you know, and economically, if things are so expensive out there, it's very difficult for them to do that. So to what extent, I mean, is there a transition period, or is it, you know, do we need absolutely to develop first this, you know, agrarian lifestyle to help us actually develop vanashram?
My understanding is that Srila Prabhupada very much wanted that we as a society endeavor in such a way that we create communities outside of our cities, and that those who are not engaged in frontline preaching should actually be residing outside of these demoniac cities. As you rightly mentioned, we don't have the kind of cities that existed previously. So I boil this down in the following statement, that our preaching basis should be the cities, but our living basis, our living place should not be the cities. And Prabhupada had to argue, actually, with many senior devotees, you know, and many of his senior disciples, who were giving, some of those were just briefly mentioned in the video that I presented yesterday. Many devotees were telling, but Prabhupada, you know, you're talking about the need and requesting us, you know, to go to the country to establish varnashram in an agrarian setting. But, you know, most of our devotees are working in the cities. How is it possible and practical for them? Then Prabhupada would say, he first replied, well, okay, you know, there is unemployment now growing more and more. So those of our devotees who are not working, let them go. And then a devotee came back and said, but Srila Prabhupada, you know, what about those who are working? You know, which is the majority of our devotees. What about those who are working? What was Prabhupada's answer? Some of you, I'm sure, have read. Prabhupada said, they're working now, but after some time, that job will not be there. Prabhupada was very emphatic, and we should not misunderstand. We should clearly understand. Prabhupada was very emphatic by stating that what we are seeing and experiencing right now, this one day will not be there. Prabhupada made heavy statements. We may not like to hear them. Prabhupada said, our present day civilization is a doomed civilization. This present day civilization will come to an end. Modern cities in Europe and America will be destroyed because of this one sinful activity of cow killing. These are heavy statements. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada, he explained, are you still going to be in the city when the cities actually crumble? Now, we as devotees, of course, we are preachers. We need to be in the cities for preaching to the conditioned souls. But those of us who are not preaching, we as a society, our leadership within our ISKCON society should recognize the need and the importance to help make that transition. We have a responsibility to help make a transition, because actually it is, you know, this may sound a little bit like doomsday saying, but Prabhupada himself used the word doom. You know, it's not my rendering. Prabhupada said, very, you know, it's in the folio. present-day civilization is a doomed society. Even one doesn't have to be, you know, a great spiritually enlightened person. There are many ordinary people today. Ordinary, I mean people who are having some insight as to what is going on all over the world, who understand that, hey, you know, this is not at all a good situation. We're doing things in a very wrong way. And, you know, we could go down and list so many things we're all familiar with. So there is a real, I mean, Prabhupada expected us to take this up 40 years ago. You see, to create these communities, support them in different ways. And we may present so many arguments that, well, you know, North America is not so easy and etc. Prabhupada expected that it actually happened here as well in North America. He had great aspirations, great hope actually for, I mean, he was coming to Gita Nagari, isn't it? Prabhupada, at the end of his manifest pastimes, was coming to Gita Nagari, and he was explaining, I will go there and sit and show them how to do it. So was Prabhupada just, you know, speaking about something that was impossible? Did he give us this instruction knowing that it was not possible to do? Guru gives instruction, and although it is very difficult, sometimes instructions that are given seem impossible to us. But nothing is impossible, actually. And especially the more we understand the philosophy. And Prabhupada explains that actually up until 200 years ago, majority of people around the world were living this more simplified lifestyle. It is only 200 years ago that this deviation started and has continued in a very dramatic and, you know, such a way as it has. It has come to an extremely critical, you know, point right now. So my reply briefly, or to summarize, is that yes, it is very much possible, and it is something that Srila Prabhupada expected us to do. And unless there are individuals who very seriously take up these particular instructions given by Srila Prabhupada, then it will be delayed as it has been delayed so far. To me, it's absolutely clear that it is very much something that Prabhupada wanted, and it means that, you know, our now, basically, you know, Prabhupada said that one of the purposes of our Krishna consciousness movement is to bring a complete overhaul in society and to revert to the more natural lifestyle. So we're doing that in different ways, you know, by preaching, of course, by getting people to chant the holy name, by distributing books, and these things need to continue. At the same time, we need to understand this other dimension. It is like, I would say, in my humble, you know, observations, humble opinion, that we have an imbalance. We have an imbalance between, you know, our understanding of Bhagavad Dharma and Varnashrama Dharma. And there's a need to bring more of a balance. And in this way, society, for our own devotees and for people in general society, can actually have some hope. Otherwise, it is a very, very, very critical situation. Very, very critical. I think it's gone over the time a little bit, so thank you very much. Jai Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki, Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki, Gaura Premanandi.